the blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient and each other. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of the inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day, oh, happy blessed place, oh, happy blessed time, oh, happy blessed path, oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi sabha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
We are
here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
There are back jacks in the corner over there. If you'd like to grab one. I want you to look at this money. Renee.
This past week I got really identified, and I was looking at it and all the subtleties of it, and I saw a lot, but the thing that I saw that I don't think I've seen before is how I'm not compassionate with myself about it.
So when you get identified, which means that there's lots of different aspects of ourselves, and you find yourself falling into one of those, or with ego, self-hate, conditioning, you found that how you're not compassionate with yourself when that happens. So, not accepting that happened?
Yeah, it's like self-hate is beating me up for getting identified.
Right.
In addition to being identified.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And there you are, another layer of this is wrong, mm-hmm. You're doing something wrong.
Yeah, and it seems to be at a different level, or let's see, maybe I didn't see it before. So I don't know for sure if it's at a different level, but being more involved in practice and mm-hmm. taking a little more responsibility for it, mm-hmm. It seems to be more hateful mm-hmm. about it. Like, you know, you need to be representing practice, you need to be perfect, you know, all those
people
things.
Who represent practice don't get
yeah.
identified, and
yeah.
you go again.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right. So, it is a new level of it, and you stepping up and taking more responsibility for practice sounds like it's firing in the next thing that you'll buy into, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, this is, you're not representing practice. It's one that can really get you.
Yeah, like I'm supposed to be, you know.
Perfect.
Like a Zen master. Sitting all on the time. You know, like I'm not supposed to get angry or upset or obsessed on something, or you know, whatever mm-hmm. form it's taking at the time.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a bad thing to do that.
Uh-huh. So you're exploring that those beliefs about what the Zen master is and what that you need to be one, and that the Zen master doesn't do all of these things, doesn't mm-hmm. Get angry or get identified or get obsessed or anything like that.
Yeah, and that high standard that it's trying to put on me. And then and what was great about that was when I saw that I wasn't compassionate towards myself, then I was.
So it was a little signal to you there that, wow, this is not compassion coming out here. You know, this judgment is not mm-hmm. what I'm practicing. And so it was your opportunity to actually look for it and mm-hmm. be compassionate.
Mm-hmm. And then I could record and listen about it or provide reassurances and be compassionate.
Yeah, which is probably closer to what a Zen master is than perfect.
Yeah.
You know, not getting angry or getting identified or anything like that. It's just another way to bring that all in to what it is that you're practicing.
Yeah, because there's nothing wrong with being identified.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So it sounds like a little mentoring came in and a new perspective.
Mm-hmm.
That perhaps getting beat up over not being perfect or not living up to the standards that conditioning sets up is an opportunity to practice compassion.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's interesting. I've been looking at compassionate self-discipline and my need to have compassionate self-discipline in my life. And something that Jen shared probably months ago about not being a person who likes to take pills and that conditioning gave with this narrative about taking pills to get her to not take her pills. I've been seeing this narrative a lot lately with conditioning with myself. You're not a person who likes routine, and you're not a person that likes rules, and you're a rule breaker and a fly by the seat of your pants kind of gal.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, you don't like this.
A lot of you,
and feeling very set up to, you know, to suffer a lot because I didn't use that compassionate self-discipline. I think of self-discipline, you know, conditioning tells me self-discipline is this painful, difficult, bad thing.
Right.
But that's it's not. It's treating yourself with compassion so that you don't suffer through these regrets about what you did when you weren't using self-discipline. So I've been bringing a lot of awareness around recognizing these dynamics.
Yes.
And seeing where I need to bring the self-discipline into my life and where I need to...
Compassion self-discipline
yes.
sounds like... That's the key word. That was what we shared earlier. It was like, you know, because conditioning has all sorts of ideas about what self-discipline looks like, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly. All these preconceived ideas about how difficult or painful that would be.
Right,
But that's not true. Not having it is what's painful and difficult in life. Not doing it is what's causing the suffering. So it's interesting how conditioning has created this narrative of who I am that sets me up for all sorts of suffering.
Right. You're not a person who does all of these things. You know, you're a person who flies by the seat of her pants, or you know, doesn't follow these rigid kind of rules and things like that. And so there it is, setting it up, and you don't. Yeah, that's how you live, but then you don't do the things that you need compassion and self-discipline for, and it comes around the other side and says, well, there you go. You're not being disciplined here.
For not being self-disciplined, yeah.
So it's kind of like the typical setup. It'll set you up with, this is how you are, this is how you should be, or this is your identity, and when you live up to that identity, it'll come around the other side and say, well, there you go.
Look what you did. You made your own bed. So it's wonderful to be able to view that all now with the awareness of how these dynamics have been happening for so long. And I really wanted to take the opportunity to say thank you to all of you that create this amazing place. It's so wonderful to have found this path again, and I feel like I've been, you know, bushwhacking my way through life, and it feels really good to be on the path again.
That's a great description.
Yeah,
it
feels
feel
pretty
way.
Lit up being here right now, so thank you.
Oh, that's great, thank you. Yeah, it's helpful to have everything out in the open and just the ability to explore it in a compassionate way, which is really the foundation of it all, rather than, you know, it being this constant standard that conditioning is using against us. You know, in either direction that we go in, you know, we could get our lives in such a place where we're, you know, so disciplined that, you know, that when we don't meet those standards, it beats us up over here, and we get so loose that it beats us up over here, and then finding that the compassion is really the bottom, the foundation upon it all. So.
Yeah, the middle path. It's mm-hmm. not too far in either direction, and that's where the compassion lies. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Penny. I've been having this kind of fun experience of sort of practicing or living as if, you know, or doing what, you know, Sherry talks about losing interest in how we feel. Mm-hmm. Actually, most of the time I feel pretty good, but you know, sometimes I don't, or sometimes I don't see the world as a generous or kind place, and so I read the book that people have been talking about recently that Sherry referenced in her blog recently about this, for this man who essentially died and came back to life, and it's very powerful. And you know, really where I come out is that what's real is compassion. You know? What's real is love.
Yeah.
What's real is beauty. And what's been fun recently is even when I don't feel any of that, I believe it's true.
It's that what if place
yeah.
that we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's that, you know, I may not feel it now, but I know it's here, and you're just living in a way of like accepting that that's there.
Right.
That's
really,
the foundation.
Really convinced that that is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And it puts the experience of not, and what we're conditioned would like to do is, you know, go to that, well, why aren't you there all the time stuff. But
right.
that's part of what isn't true.
That's part of the trap.
And so I'm pretty much not going there. I mean, it puts the experience of not maybe feeling those things in a very different place. Because mm-hmm. it's like knowing that just around the corner,
yeah.
that place is there, and that's the real place.
Yeah.
And where I'm living at the moment is just, you know, some little way station where I got lost, some little turnpike exit that I can, you know, I can get off of. And so it gives a lightness even to that.
Yeah, even that it's like, I it's just, the conditioning is just so close, you know, close with the, this. Well, what you're describing is that there's a belief that there's something wrong, even in the subtle level that it is in, but being able to see that that's what's going on. Oh,
yeah.
I'm my attention is being drawn to there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And getting at that, okay, well, I know that there isn't, so how can I get to that place where I know that there isn't?
Well, I don't even have to
not even that.
Yeah,
I'm getting
yeah.
it to because
that would be
even
that, trying to get there.
Yeah, right. That's kind of like believing that there's like the way station or something like that. It's almost like I'm here. I'm accepting that I'm here, and yeah, even that, just knowing that.
It's not like
all
this
embracing.
Too shall pass.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
It's just like weather or something like that.
I had this neat experience of having conditioning be doing something really unfortunate in terms of, you know, the kind of things it was saying and internally and the kind of energy it was expressing, and it was not what I wanted to have happen, and I got that I didn't have to own that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that truly is not me.
Yeah.
And the authentic me is doing a whole different thing. And boy, what a relief that was, because
yeah.
if I had gotten caught in that, it just would have been one of those awful spirals.
Yeah.
Down.
Yeah, just why take that on? I mean, it's just like the you use that was just shared earlier, like you were like this, you do that,
mm-hmm.
and when it starts to spout off, we don't have to take any of it personally, we don't
mm-hmm.
have to take it on. It's just an opportunity to see, wow, that's what a human being can have happen to them. They can get taken
yeah.
over, they can get identified.
Yeah.
And it sounds like in that place where you're just able to just embrace that back in again.
Yeah. I read this really neat poem. It came at the bottom of some article, and the one line was, I won't quote it exactly, but it's more eloquent than I'm going to quote it, but something like, I want to know if you can see beauty even when it isn't a pretty day, and if you can source your life from that scene. And I love that. And what occurred to me as I was walking down here, it's just not even if I can source my life, but if I can see that life is sourced
yes.
from that beauty. And
yep.
if, you know, it feels like at some core level, I really am getting that. That
yep.
you know, even if I'm in a snit, My life, in fact, is sourced from the beauty of all that is. And it's very, it feels really good to start tapping into that.
Yeah, because it's pointing to something larger, like that this snip, because when we're in it, it seems like that's just so huge because conditioning creates it to be so huge. It's like the there you go again place, and all of a sudden my entire world is enveloped in something wrong and how I'm wrong. And that's not really the big picture. The big picture is your life is really good. You know, it's like
there's nothing to do with that snip.
Right. That snip is just something that's happening really close by and I'm getting talked into believing that it's me.
Yeah.
I'm real.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I read that book too much because we talked about it and I, you know, wanted to make sure I got in on it. And what I really, one of the biggest things that I took away from there is what he had this near-death experience. He said really that the message that he was given there was, he phrased it first as three things. He said, you are dearly loved and cherished. There's no need to be afraid, and you can't do anything wrong. Mm-hmm. And I just love that so much. And what I realized is that what conditioning's message is exactly the opposite.
Yes.
You are totally unloved, unwanted, always have been and always will be. You really do need to be afraid, and everything you do is wrong.
And everything in the world is wrong.
That's right. I mean, it's true. I mean, it's like, it's that, those are the ends of the continuum.
Right.
You know?
And we can know exactly where we are.
That's right.
Based on what we're hearing.
Exactly. That's what I've really been practicing paying attention to is, you know, is my attention on that end that I want it to be on? Or am I paying attention to that story that this is wrong and I'm screwed up and, you know, life is terrible?
Yep.
And it's really, that's it. I mean, which one's my attention on?
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's where those are the two places that it can be, and
yeah.
You know, it's so funny because it can easily get to the spiral with you know, that my attention is on there's something wrong, and all of a sudden conditioning using that as something wrong,
like
you know,
exactly.
It's like what we started off with, where
yes.
And then from there, boy, it just
there's nowhere to go.
It's hard,
right? Nowhere.
Except
right.
That it's
yeah.
A signal that it, yeah. If it we practice long enough, we get to see that oh, that's exactly what's happening. That it's being that this is being used against me, and it's just an instant. It's like the raising of the eyebrow. You know, it's just okay. That's what's going on. My attention is back to there's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Thank you. June.
Amen, sister. I was identified this morning.
Taken over.
Just got up early and working since I got up or drive down here, which is a full quarter of a mile. just dealing with software that does one thing 1 minute, something else the next.
I think it's designed to be a spiritual opportunity.
And so, you know, I'm just going to say the same thing that's been said. As through that, through grace, through practice, the awareness drops in that this is happening, that there's identity here. And it's just so fantastically wonderful to leave it right there.
Yeah, that's right. Don't need to do anything with it.
Not another thought, not another iota of energy going to it.
Yeah.
It's just brain function. It's the neocortex. That's all it is. And it is contained in consciousness, awareness, intelligence. It's hard to express what that is. And um, have, that's all. It's just, there's nothing else to do with when your awareness drops in, boom.
That's it.
Walk away.
Yeah, it's like the game of hot potato, isn't it? It's like, the music stops. Whatever, I don't even know which game it's one of them, right? You know, it's like, because the trap is, well, what does this mean? What do I need to do about it? Is it because I didn't eat my Wheaties this morning? What was it?
Yes, many years ago, it was suggested to me that noticing what happens immediately after the awareness drops in, that you're identified in one way or another. I forget how I started that sentence. But noticing what happens immediately after you see that,
yes,
is a very good indicator, kind of, of your relationship with yourself.
Uh-huh.
And I've practiced with that for many years. Mm-hmm. And I will say truthfully, it's kind of a confession. And I'm going to knock wood as I say it, but that point has shifted. There's nothing better when your awareness drops in, that's it.
That's right.
There's
that's
right. No second thought about it.
That's right.
There's no doing anything or why or what next or...
It's just a relief as you're talking about. Yeah, exactly. It's just left there by the side. I mean, it's like leaving a screaming TV box. Wait, oh, sorry, that's the image. It just came to me. But it's like, there it is. I've seen it for what it is. I don't have to keep walking with it any longer. You know, it can keep doing whatever it does, because that's what it does. I don't have to take it personally. It's not part of me. I'm going in this direction. Because the trap, again, is just to get involved with it again. That's how it just brings it all back to it again.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's not... I mean, and if we do, we catch on to that somewhere along the point, and we all... It's like every moment is an opportunity to just do exactly what you just said. Just drop it and leave it behind.
Because it was never real.
It was never real.
And it was never wrong.
Yeah, it was never wrong. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, I want to join into it. I've been looking a lot at love lately, and I don't know, it's kind of an overused word, but I don't know how else to describe it. And
can folks hear down there?
No.
Just in case.
Can they hear or can't they hear?
They sound like they could.
Yeah. Okay. So I've spent a lot of my life, it seems like, in this identification of wanting to get it right. And actually, just looking at what she was saying is love me. You know, just love me.
Right.
Just tell me the right thing to do so I can get love.
Mm-hmm. But that's all you really wanted. That's all she really wanted.
You know, she wasn't really that worried about getting it right. She was more worried about being in love.
Yeah, the tragic part of that is that being loved got tied into doing it right.
Exactly.
And the only way to get that love was by being a conditional way.
Exactly. Being the right person, doing the right thing, saying the right thing, all of that. And I've actually had an experience, and what I've seen is that I don't have to try to get love, because guess what? it is authentically who I am, and in fact it's an everything that I come in contact with, even those things that I would think are not animate,
yeah,
or full of love, or you know,
yeah.
It's actually it's in everything.
Yeah, it is in everything.
And
we'd even done an exercise at one point where we just go around to trees and plants and say, I love you, do you love me? And
exactly.
We
got
an answer, and it's like, wow, they do love me.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, even in that plastic milk container, you know, uh-huh. It just seems so separate from me,
right.
And not important. And I've been practicing coming from that place of just loving, putting my attention on loving what's in front of me. And it just feels so good to be in that place, to come from that place.
Yes.
Because, and I know because, but I think just it's because of who we are.
It's who we are. And what is the alternative, really? I mean,
yeah.
Do we really want that? I mean, it's almost like, it's not even so much loving the thing or the thing loving us, it's the experience. Whatever it is that the process that's going on is my experience.
Yeah.
Of life.
And ultimately, I mean, it's loving this being.
Yeah.
Who's not separate from any of that external stuff. It's like that internal stuff too that we would label like the plastic milk cartons, you know.
Uh-huh.
Just what's ever going on, you know, whether it's identification or, you know. It's all included
yeah.
in that.
Yeah.
And
because how could it not be again?
Yeah.
It's because it isn't separate.
It isn't. None of it's separate. And it's just anyway. The email class is bringing this up too. You know, being in that place of just living from that place of abundance
mm-hmm.
and love and generosity and the experience of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really, it's predictable that when one starts practicing that, of course, you know, the other forces will amp up.
Exactly.
To try and pull our attention. I was having experience of a lot of physical sensations coming up that mean something mm-hmm. about, you know, health and
uh-huh.
and just like that would want to pull me into, you know, yeah, this is really, really real. And to just see that for what it is, like, oh, that's a trick.
Uh-huh.
It's a trick to pull me out of this place of just loving.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if there's anything more to say about that, but it's just been a really, just again, as someone said earlier, it's just grateful for the practice
yes.
that brought me to that place of knowing. And how, you know, actually, even before this practice, I think I had that awareness of love infusing everything, but this practice gave me a concrete way to
yeah.
live in that place.
Yeah.
You know, how to get there step by step and right there.
That it's not something that comes up from up in here,
yeah.
like an idea or a concept,
right.
but a way to actually live that.
Right.
To actually put into practice the quality of the life is determined by the focus of your attention, by giving you the ability to direct your attention to
yeah.
that. So the email class comes out and it's focused on abundance and a world that loves you and is friendly. And voila, we start turning our attention to that, and all of
yeah.
a sudden we start, you know, finding milk cartons that,
yeah.
that
love
us and we love them.
Yeah.
Of course, why not?
Yeah.
And the minute we step into that expansive universe conditioning, which we talk about, once it's our attention for itself solely and doesn't want to share and starts to clamor for
yeah.
back for our attention again.
Yeah. Yeah. So it just the practice just really took it out of the realm of just reading it, about it, knowing it, and
mm-hmm.
okay, so this is how
we live it.
How you live it.
Exactly.
You know.
Uh-huh.
Moment by moment. So yeah, it's pretty great.
Thank you so much.
This is a really helpful conversation, and what I've been looking at the last couple of days, what has come up is what happens when I sit on a cushion during meditation.
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting because so there was a discussion, and it happens while I'm sitting here.
That's a discussion?
Yeah, there's a discussion about paying attention and bringing the attention back, you know. Am I kind of like it? Yeah. It's like, who's bringing the attention back? Uh-huh. Well, first it started out, am I bringing the attention back? No, you're not. And then who's bringing it back? And then this...
You may be quiet over there.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
But internally, there's a little debate going on about, you know,
yeah, exactly. And then the story developed about, based on something that came up a couple of weeks ago about, oh yeah, it's a microcosm of your life. All the identities are in there, and they're all, you know, there's the taskmaster, and she's really rigid, and then there's this, relax. You know, there's all these, yeah. And so I kind of got duped. I think I got tricked because I'm sitting here, and then this morning I was sitting here, it was happening. And I was kind of seeing the conversation again. And all of a sudden what dropped in was, what if there was this wasn't being evaluated? What if there was no evaluation of me just sitting there? Uh-huh. And with that, I was like, oh yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, like no need to evaluate it. Uh-huh. There would just be this being sitting here, being devoted, practicing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it would kind of cut the conversation almost because it would short-circuit everything that was going on there while you were sitting there. Because inside of it, it's just real. It's a debate that I need to follow along. I need to learn something from this, or I project, get something from this, or just be caught up in it, kind of like a TV program that's on that I don't even really want to watch, but it just happens to be on, and I'm sitting there, and it's going.
Right.
So why not?
Well, yeah, that, and also what I saw this morning through the conversation was, see, I was kind of tricked, but I see that that was... It was conditioned mind coming in, evaluating, and also that need to, that want to do it right, girl. You know, that want to do it right, peace.
Yes.
I really want to do meditation. Somebody really wants to do meditation right.
Right. And so there was a way to do that.
Yes, if there were a way to do that. Uh-huh. And it's, it's such a setup, because then
because it becomes the expert. We listen to it because it knows something that's going to be valuable. I really need to follow along with this because somehow... Right. I'll get acceptance, I'll be loved.
And it seems like the setup for conditioned mind to come in and say you're doing it wrong, right?
Yeah.
Ultimately. So...
Might as well just give up meditating and leave or whatever.
Well, yeah, because part of what happens during that process I was describing is, you know, there gets to be a lot of energy in my forehead, and it's uncomfortable physically, and it's like frustration... There's all this stuff that is generated, so that...
And miraculously enough, that's exactly why we meditate. I mean, to have the experience that, you know what I'm saying? Like, not even any of that was wrong in any of it. You just got to see it all.
I got to see a process while I was sitting.
Yeah, exactly. Would you say that process happens when you're not sitting?
Oh, I bet it does. I bet it happens all over the place.
Suspicion.
Yeah, that's a very good thing. Thank you for pointing that out. I'll start expand awareness a little bit around that. That's great. Yeah, and just the only other thing that I also appreciate that was shared about conditioned mind amping up, you know, under certain circumstances. And it's interesting because yesterday I had a conversation with a mentor during an exercise that we did. And that the suggestion was to practice loving, which is still not what I would have said. I mean,
whoever I am,
it's not what I'm used to. It usually comes out of this being, you know.
Right.
So it was lovely, and and then last night, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I was wide awake, full of adrenaline, and conditioned mind was yammering about something that needed to get done. Anyway, I was like, wow, it hasn't been doing that for a while, but all of a sudden it was, and I don't want to make a story out of it, but it was just like, wow.
There it goes,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, I guess what I'm left with is I'm thinking to make some recordings that will address specifically what happens in that situation. Mm-hmm. You know, when conditioned mind is talking very loud at 3 in the morning, to really direct some recordings right to that.
Yeah, or you know, the insight that you had during the meditation is not about you being evaluated.
It's not about me being evaluated.
And, yeah. That, you know, what if this is not about getting involved with it, or the way you said that, you know, about what happened when you were meditating. You know, because all we're doing when meditating is just bring our attention back to our breath. What if I just brought my attention back to my breath? What would happen?
And just made it a non. You just made it a.
Yeah, June's analogy of, you know, there it is. I saw it. I could just keep watching it and let it go.
Yeah. Wow, that would be a change of behavior. Thank you for that suggestion.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I didn't see that, but yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Cameron, I saw a whole bunch of hands down there.
Well, yeah, the thing about it seems like a generic thing to want to get things right. Be the right person and do it right. And so then
we could be wrong.
Fill in the blank.
Well, I mean, the setup.
Yeah, yeah. That doing it right is really not that important. It's what I perceive I receive in that situation, you know, that a big issue throughout this being's life has been belonging, wanting to belong, you know, to feel a part of. And, you know, it's kind of another way of saying loved.
Mm-hmm.
But
because that's what you would have if you belong.
Yeah, yeah. If you belong, yeah, you're right. You're connected and all of what love, yeah. And seeing that the first assignment in the email class, it says practice now for the next 48 hours being in that state of belonging.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, it's just like so obvious that, well, darn, that's what's always there. And this being has been trying to belong.
Uh-huh.
And it's the irony is that trying to belong is what makes one not belong.
yeah, because if I'm following what you're saying, is that belonging is something you're trying to get.
Yeah.
And if you got it, you belong. But you can't want to belong.
I can't
get it. Because then you would get,
I can't get it if I already have it and don't recognize it.
Right.
So I just keep chasing after this illusion.
So you live in a world of not belonging.
Yeah,
to get it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I'm, you know, it's just becoming obvious that, you know, it's a perfect thing for ego to have me focused on, because only somebody who is separate cannot belong.
Yes.
And there's no way to not be separate, because there's only one thing that is, and we're all, you know, like cells in the body of life, kind of thing. And so there's no way not to belong. But ego keeps wanting us to do something about belonging or about loving or about something that will help us to get what this belonging thing is.
Yeah, to get what we already have.
To get what we already have. And doing that keeps our attention on not having it.
Right, yeah. I just get this image of this dog chasing its tail.
Yeah.
The way you're talking about it, it's like, well, I already got the tail, it's attached to me.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
Part of me. I gotta just keep chasing it around, because that's what conditioning is telling me I need to do.
Yeah, and keeping my attention on that, it, you know, creates a situation where I fail to realize that's what's already there. And if it wasn't there, how would I even know that's what I want? I wouldn't even know what belongs
it would be a non-issue.
Yeah.
Just be like, you wouldn't even have dropped into your awareness
that
you needed to have this thing.
Right.
But because you quote unquote don't, that's why it's front and center.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sort of bringing attention to belonging in the last few hours is just like so, wow. It's not that, it's just there. It's just there.
Mm-hmm.
And all those years.
I just, believe that you didn't belong.
Yeah. It's just interesting the way that awareness, which doesn't really change anything, can make everything different.
Yes. Yeah. It's that shift
of
attention away from that belief or that idea about whether you belong or not to actually belonging, which is not the same thing as trying to belong. Because trying to belong is out there, and someday maybe if you get all the things arranged in a particular way, you just didn't, and you need to try a little harder, away from that conversation and into just belonging.
Yeah, well, you said it to someone else. It's not here that we experience what we want. It's here.
It's here.
And all that wanting and the mental exercises about what belonging is and what it looks like and what it's going to feel like when I actually finally get there.
Right. Uh-huh.
That's all up here.
It is, yeah.
And then just dropping down here, then I can actually experience belonging, or you know, whatever that word even means anything, you know.
Yeah, you're finding the source of where that is in you, because like you just said, you wouldn't know that you wanted it if it wasn't already inside of you. So where does it live?
Yeah, and how does it feel?
How does it feel?
I mean, I've been feeling it and haven't even put my attention there to know that's what I've been feeling.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting better on that.
Yeah, <really. laughs>
Thank you.
Thank you.
Talking about the belonging and love and kind of the themes that have come up, it seems like I've recognized recently that someone in my immediate family is kind of a physical representation of my conditioning. And it's really interesting because my exchanges with this person, or I shouldn't say exchanges, but my experience with this person is that they actually vocalize everything that my conditioning tells me.
All the voices that you hear, you get to hear.
Uh-huh. So like if I get an email or a phone call or even one-on-one time with this person, it's like, well, you should be doing this, and how come you don't do that, and it really hurts me when you da-da-da, and you know, it's like, it's always feels like it really feeds my conditioning. And so
by the reactions that you get from that?
Yeah, that I start to believe what she's saying. And it's just been really interesting, like recently, because I've just really stayed in awareness around my my exposure to her. And, you know, I knew coming into practice that I would begin to shed people in my life. Like, I understood that was going to happen. But having it happen with someone in my immediate family, I wasn't necessarily prepared with. And, you know, I think in the past that I've always wanted to belong, and I always felt like love was being able to recognize what I'm doing wrong and then fixing that, you know?
Love was recognizing what you're doing wrong and fixing that.
Like being open to someone, being able to tell me something and then saying, oh, you're right and I love you, so let's do this together, which is just...
So is it like a compromise or something like that? Because like you need to change in order to be loved?
Yeah, I guess so. You know, to belong and to be loved, that I need for you to be this better person.
Okay.
To be in this relationship. And it's been, what a gift to have this person and to be able to have her be my teacher through this process. Mm-hmm. Although it's been very painful, uh-huh. and it's really forced me to practice my awareness, that I can choose to say, actually, I don't need that to be loved. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And that I'm... You know, I love you just the way you are, and I'm not asking you to change, and so why can't we enter into this relationship with that? Really what comes to mind is that compassion, loving kindness towards each other. And I think because I've come to her with that, that now I'm grieving that I won't ever have that with her. That she doesn't have the awareness to be able to bring that to meet me halfway with that compassionate, loving kindness. Or at least right now she doesn't.
All right. Uh-huh. Yeah, we don't know you don't know what's going on for anybody else, but it sounds like you have a good sense about what's going on for you in all this, that she's being a really great teacher for you, as challenging as that is.
Mm-hmm.
That it's basically, I think a family is the one place where the buttons will be deeply pushed, just because we, there are in some ways our first teachers,
mm-hmm.
the people who have been there, set that whole system up within us
mm-hmm.
with. So it sounds like you're practicing though, bringing all of your attention and awareness to it and your compassion to the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
doing whatever it is that you can do to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm. And just recognizing too that there are people that I'm going to experience in this life that are like a mirror of my conditioning,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that I can choose to not have those people in my life. And
yeah, and you can, we can, the way you described it is that, you know, so they say this, and it mirrors something that goes on for you. Do you ever write those kinds of things down, like the whatever it is, the conditioning that you hear?
Mm-mm.
You know, like, so to get clear that this is, you don't have to take it on,
mm-hmm.
in other words, because what I'm hearing you saying is that they say this, and then it's really hard for you to stay free of that. Like, you don't have to, like, just because somebody expresses what is going on for them doesn't have anything to do with you,
mm-hmm.
is what I hear you say.
Right.
You don't have to change or do anything different. Love is who you are,
mm-hmm.
and you're fine just the way you are. Mm-hmm. You don't have to change anything like that. But to kind of tease out the aspects of condition that are trying to latch on and,
mm-hmm.
and really bring you into that.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying that I would write down what conditioning is saying to me?
Yeah, the whole thing. You know, mm-hmm. like, so this person says this. This is what goes on for me around that. This is what internally what is being said about that.
Mm-hmm.
And just so you get kind of like
yeah.
a little bit of arm distance from it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Rather than it being something where you have to change your life or do something different about it. But to get some distance from it, just to see it all for what it is.
Yeah. It's. I've also really been intrigued or curious about recording and listening. I've never done that before,
oh, wow.
And just because it's, you know, I hear it mentioned and I see it, you know, in the emails and things, but I haven't. I think because I feel like there needs to be like these rules and parameters around how you do it. I mean, I think it's pretty clear. You just record and listen.
So you can get the phone or whatever, because recorders are now everywhere. I was
yeah.
sharing that just recently. That you just pick it up and you just start talking into it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you finish, you push play.
Yeah.
It's true. There are some techniques in there. Like that sounds like you don't. If you don't have. There's nothing wrong with you. No, I think what you practice is what you have. Yeah, that lays out the entire practice
oh, okay.
of recording.
It's actually on my bedside table, so I need to read it. It's amazing how it's just been laying there. And I want to record and listen.
Awesome. That's perfect. No extra energy expenditure necessary.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I was thinking, I say this every time, it only took how long this time? 50 minutes to disidentify?
It could be days.
It could be days. It could be lifetimes.
We just rejoice for 50 minutes. Yeah.
The thing that was so helpful as I was listening to people talking was that, from the first time somebody talked, so if you're identified, you're identified. Now, that isn't rationalizing or saying there aren't things I can do to work with it, but the worst thing that seems to be the most is beating myself up for it or wishing it were different. Those things don't seem to loosen the screws.
No.
But when somebody was talking just a second ago, I was thinking, you know, there is nobody else. Mm. Right? There's no me, really. But, you know, in that thing of... you know, needing to leave jobs or relationships or friendships or people fall away, I have found that it wasn't actually necessary. That as my perspective has stayed in, when my perspective is grounded in the moment and in kindness and love for myself, there is no
yeah.
you know, they become kind of cute, and I sort of feel sorry for them. Uh-huh. And I don't need to push them out of my life. I don't need to have them, you know, when I'm identified nearby. I don't need to ask their advice, so to speak. Take the phone and talk to them.
Right.
What do you think about my negative thinking and depression? It's true! Get out of it! But anyway, it was just helpful to remember because, you know, most of my big insights have been around there is nobody else. I wish there were. I wish I could blame my conditioned identification on situations and other people, and but it seems to be all in here.
Yeah.
And that people reflect that, of course.
Because everything, you know, what's funny is you said that everything reflects something.
Yeah.
You know, like, because if I can, if, you know, it's like the way projection works. If I could see it in something, it's somewhere here.
Yes. The good and the bad.
Yeah, everything.
And it's interesting how we can, I don't know about you, but it's a lot easier for me to say, to own the bad.
Yeah.
Than the good. Well, right. Not exactly like Mother Teresa, you know, or whatever, you know.
Right, exactly, yeah. I can see those qualities, but I can see.
Yeah, but I can see how I worry and I'm anxious and controlling and, you know. That's just, so anyway, it was just helpful to hear because the other thing I was playing with, I too read the book, and being in a miserable place, I was thinking that actually one thing that was comforting about this book that was recommended in the newsletter was that, I don't know if this is true, but what I took from it was, you know, right when you went into this experience of dying, you know, it was great, there was this kind of wormy place, and I remember thinking, you know, he had nothing going about it. You know, he's just interested.
Right, it was just, there it is.
That's right. And then, boom, you know, he pops out of it. And then, you know, so I was thinking for myself that that would be, you know, just stay with what, this is it. This is it. And wishing it were different has not doesn't seem to be helpful.
Right. And it almost reinforces it as something real.
Right, like, it is something real. That is a true story about me, you know, yeah. So anyway, that's just what occurred, and I'm grateful that I show up, because what somebody was saying earlier is, I actually do believe, I mean, I do know, and I do it in my recorder, the truth is that what you are surrounded by is love and kindness and compassion and, you know, Jesus. So, you know, the truth is that. And then I go and listen to it, and yes. Then when I'm identified and not quite believing it, thinking, oh yeah, I do know that's true. I may not be experiencing it. I may be, you know, somewhat stuck.
Yes.
But I know it's going to pass.
Right.
I have enough experience of it passing. It's just amazing. I had that happen in seconds the other day. I mean, I am L in the worms, believing they're worms, and then all of a sudden it's just gone.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my gosh, and nothing changed.
Right.
That my head was telling me needed to change.
If you stick around long enough, like you're saying, it becomes obvious that nothing has to change, that it's always, that this is just part of how it works.
That's,
you know, like that this well-being is always there, and I don't see it, and then all of a sudden I do.
Yeah.
And, and what you're saying is you just keep showing up and practicing, you have the willingness to keep doing that over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, and we start seeing that the stories aren't true. Well, wait a minute, that's not quite true. Because yesterday Sophia was telling me no, and I was just fine. And today she's telling me no, and I'm screaming at her.
Did the no change?
Did the no change? Did the six-year-old do something different? No.
No. Well, that's another good thing about the recording listening to is that we hear whole lots of messages that are not helpful, and to record some that are truly helpful, and to listen to those over and over just to remind ourselves about what is true is key.
And to get to know what's running in our head. You know, in the beginning, that was really helpful to me. Oh my gosh, I'm believing that all the time? Yeah,
it's that arm distance again,
me.
Right? It's that putting it out there. You know, recording it and then hearing it for what it's for what it is.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much.